Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont, sitting in for Bruce Dumont and welcoming you to Beyond the Beltway, analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Republican Chris Roebling, Democrat Mark Casello, and Steve Bollidge, who is one of the co-founders of the Tea Party movement in Illinois. Our telephone lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, it's btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, it's www.beyondthebeltway.com. And forgive me for breaking up and cracking up as we go on the air. Let's talk about starting with a stop position. They made the little opening that I normally do. I, of course, have been doing it for years. But, you know, we put the names down. It's on a piece of paper, and I occasionally refer to it. And as is the case tonight, I decided, well, you know, I'd been away for a couple of weeks, so I would read it. Well, it says here, Donna, that this was used last week. It shows you how we save paper here.
It's a green program.
This was used last week when our good friend Dan Proft was sitting in for me. So here it is. It says, live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont sitting in for Bruce Dumont. Or Dan Proft sitting in for Bruce Dumont. So obviously you should always read your copy before you read it. That's Broadcasting 101, and I have violated it as we begin the program this evening. But again, it gives me a reason to thank Dan Proft for sitting in for me when I was away last week in New York for the TV Land Awards, which were a terrific show. It'll be on actually on TV Land tonight after we go off the air. And also Chris Roebling, who you've already heard from, Republican tonight. He has sat in for me in recent weeks as well. So, Chris, thank you very much. We're going to be talking about this past week. Obviously, you have the president making a major address on the deficit. You have the Republicans in the House passing their budget with no Democratic support. So the lines, as we really have said for the last couple of weeks, really have been drawn as to what campaign 2012 is going to be all about. And, of course, the Obama campaign will be run right here in Chicago. They raised about $17 million last week in a series of fundraisers. The president was in town, whirlwind tour, as he generally does when he comes back to Chicago. And, again, spent the night here one day. And we should tell you, just for those listening around the country, we do this program about 1 mile from where the Obama presidential campaign will be run from. That is at the Prudential Building, if you know the downtown Chicago area at all. But tonight, the big question is, okay, we'll have all the issues. We're going to spend a lot of the time talking about the issues. But the big question is, if you do not like Barack Obama, someone has to beat Barack Obama. And at this moment, relatively, you know, not that far away from when the voters will go to the polls when you really look at it, the Republicans really don't know who their standard bearer is going to be. A recent poll has come out. It's done by the Public Policy Polling Organization, and this is what they found. This was just last Friday. Donald Trump, the billionaire, the non-bashful billionaire, leading the Republican field with 26%. Mike Huckabee, who's run before, obviously now a TV commentator, former governor of Arkansas, 17%. Mitt Romney, who many felt would be the odds-on favorite to get it this year, he is stuck at 15%, has been at that for most of the campaign season. Newt Gingrich at 11%. And then you get into some interesting figures, at least I find them to be interesting. Sarah Palin, who's dominated the media for the last year and a half, she's there at 8%. Ron Paul, always a favorite, a congressman from Texas, a libertarian, always a favorite in the Republican, at least debates, he's at 5%. And then you've got the Minnesota twins, Tim Pawlenty, the former governor at 4%, and Michelle Bachmann, the congresswoman, she is at 4%. And she has probably come the furthest in the last couple of months because she has sent signals that maybe she really does want to enter the Republican primary. So my question, we're going to spend the first portion of the show this evening, and I really want to get reaction whether you are for or against any of these candidates. I'd really like to hear from you at 1-800-723-8289. But I begin with asking our Tea Party guy, because Donald Trump has been positioning himself as the favorite of the Tea Party. He addressed the South Florida Tea Party people yesterday. He's throwing red meat out there. I mean, the media is just beside itself with the red meat that he's throwing out there. But you're a Tea Party guy.
Correct.
Where do you stand on whether Donald Trump is a viable candidate that could be acceptable to most of your colleagues in the Tea Party?
Well, we like how Donald Trump, he brings out all the issues. He's not afraid to go after the issues and say it like it is. And that's one of the problems with most candidates. They want to sugarcoat everything. Donald Trump doesn't do that. Donald Trump comes out and says it like it is. But on the other side of the coin, I don't personally think Donald Trump is somebody that the Tea Party is going to fall behind, because Donald Trump says some things that are kind of out there for us.
Like what?
Well, when he talks about Afghanistan and Iraq, you know, he doesn't seem to be concise about that. He's on spending. You know, he says, well, you can't spend more than you make. Well, we agree with that. But I'm not hearing anything from him about, like, the deficit. Well, why doesn't he just say that the whole concept of the argument right now is failed and it needs to change? You know, he doesn't address this far enough for me.
Chris Roebling is our card-carrying Republican tonight, a long active in Republican politics. Is Donald Trump serious in your mind?
Well, I think he's potentially serious. I don't think that he's serious yet. I think that Donald Trump is winning this poll, which is from a group that has gotten a lot of polls very terribly wrong. But let's face it, people are not focusing today. Republicans are not focusing on their choices. Neither are Democrats really focusing on the final stages of the election.
We should, by the way, mention that in more well-known polls, Trump is at least tied or within range of Huckabee.
Of Huckabee. And I think this is reflective of name identification. I think that Trump is getting a lot of support in these polls because of name identification. I think that Trump has got a lot to answer for in terms of prior statements, saying that George Bush is one of the worst presidents of all time. Yeah. I think that he said nice things about Nancy Pelosi at a time that most Republicans weren't prepared to say nice things about Nancy Pelosi, or at least her policies. And I think that Donald Trump has been sort of everywhere on a lot of issues, a lot, maybe not all, but on a lot of issues. So I think Donald Trump is a potentially serious candidate, but he's not there right now. And going off in this birther direction hasn't increased his seriousness factor.
Mark Costello is here. He is our Democrat. He is a college professor and writes for the Huffington Post. Nice to have you with us. Mm-hmm. As a Democrat, are you just chomping at the bit for Donald Trump to start being taken as a serious candidate by the media?
Well, I was going to say, I think the media is jumping on the idea of the Republicans. You have Romney and Trump as their business leaders. They have business experience, and they can create this rivalry, this narrative of rivalry between Romney and Trump. And it's allowing this Republican narrative of we need a business executive in charge of the country. But I think what's lacking and where Obama's fallen short, and he tried to recoup it this week, is a candidate that's for the people. Trump is saying a lot of direct commentary, but he is not engaging the issues in a serious way, I don't think.
All right, we're going to be back. 1-800-723-8289. Donald Trump, is he serious in your mind? Would you ever consider voting for Donald Trump? 1-800-723-8289. Yes or no? Back shortly. From New London, Connecticut to Lisbon, Ohio, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. And our phone line's open, 1-800-723-8289. Would you consider voting for Donald Trump for President of the United States? And one of the things I want to talk about is, you know, a term that's frequently used in media, Mark, is, you know, a candidate who basically takes up all the oxygen when they walk in the room. Well, for the last year and a half, it seems to me that Sarah Palin has really played that role, and yet she's at 8%. And again, whether she's at 8% or 12%, I think she's running a little bit better in some other polls. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Trump coming in now, doesn't Trump trump Sarah Palin? I mean, because he will be saying some of maybe the outrageous things and throwing the red meat like she used to throw.
Well, the comments I've seen from her have been more reactionary recently. She seems to be, you know, echoing somebody else's statement. So in that way, I think Trump is stealing some of the spotlight. But I think Trump is a media fabrication. He is the darling of the media at this moment. And if Sarah Palin comes out and she says something else, somebody else could jump in there.
But I want to say something about Trump, if I may. And that is, I think that Trump at some level says a lot about where the people of the country are. I disagree with what Mark said earlier about who's standing up for the people. I don't think the people are interested in liberal solutions. I don't think they're interested in conservative solutions. I think people want solutions. I don't think people care about ideology. If it's Barack Obama's ideology or Newt Gingrich's ideology, Americans are practical, and they want solutions. They think there's a problem with spending. They think there's a problem in the Middle East. They think there's a problem with entitlements. And I think that Donald Trump hooks into that as a guy who's from outside and who can impose solutions. I'm not saying that he can do that, but I think that's the strain that he is resonating with.
Steve. You know, I think that Donald Trump is saying all that, but Sarah Palin, she actually has leadership ability, and she's proven it, and the media hates her. And that's the only
reason. What leadership ability has she demonstrated?
She was governor of Alaska. She took on the corruption in Alaska. And during the last election, I thought she did a heck of a good job. You know, the media hates that woman.
But you did. The majority of the people that voted did not. And by the way, I'm not one of these automatic media people that jumps on Sarah Palin, okay?
Right.
However, I would say that to the average person and to the politically neutral person who maybe doesn't watch programs like this or listen to shows like this, but they know Donald Trump to be a celebrity. They know him to be a billionaire.
Right.
You know, they don't know all of his, you know, that he's bankruptcy a few times. They don't know that star, but they would know that. But I think they would compare Donald Trump, and if you ask them, who do you want to go in to negotiate with the Russians or the Saudis or the Chinese? Do you want to send Donald Trump in or do you want to send Sarah Palin in? I can't believe that the vast majority of people who might be inclined to vote for either one of them, which is a small group, wouldn't overwhelmingly say Donald Trump.
Well, I'm not so sure of that. I mean, I look at Donald Trump as kind of a media thing right now. He's saying what people want to hear because, like Chris said.
But he runs a major corporation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he also has Celebrity Apprentice and God knows what else.
That's true.
You know, I mean, the guy, he does have credentials, but I don't want to take anything away from him as far as being completely out of the box. But personally, I don't think the Tea Party people are ever going to get behind him. And we would possibly get behind Sarah Palin, but the media is going to beat that poor woman up so bad all the time.
All right, well, by the way, I would love to hear from Tea Party people who either agree or disagree with what Steve just said. Okay,
but
go ahead.
I was going to come back to something Chris said before about it's not about ideology and the American people want solutions because they see a problem with entitlements, they see a problem with Afghanistan, et cetera. But I think the ideology is what's convincing the American people there's problems maybe where there perhaps is not, or that the focus of the problem is something other than what it is. So I think ideology is playing a big role in this. And so when Trump comes along, he's able to articulate these frustrations. But are these frustrations accurate to what the American people are feeling, or are they simply a product of an ideology?
Well, I think that Trump represents a right – I don't know, a center-right response to what's going on in the country. And he happens to have, I think, and I'm a big supporter of Sarah Palin and Tim Pawlenty and Newt Gingrich and Mitt Romney. I think all of these people are terrific. I think it's great to have a lot of people in the race because that means that it's a race worth running and that, you know, people are getting in there because they want a shot at running against Barack Obama. And that's great. I think that to the extent that Trump has talked about stuff that doesn't relate to the birther issue, which I think is a loser for him, mm-hmm. He is saying we have an unsustainable spending problem. We're a nation of spendaholics, and we've got to stop that. Now, I understand you probably want to say we need to raise revenues, but
I agree with Mark. I would just say So why is it different when Trump says that than when President Obama says the same thing at his press conference earlier this week? Why, coming from Trump, does it resonate differently?
President Obama talked about cutting spending, and he actually raised it. He wants the debt ceiling raised, and the argument shouldn't be how much we're going to raise it. It should be how many trillion can we cut from the debt ceiling.
Right.
That's
right.
The real argument, not how much can we raise it.
Is the real winner in this discussion of Trump? Because Trump, at least based on what he said on CNN today, he took some real strong swipes at Mitt Romney. Is the real winner here Mike Huckabee, if indeed he decides to run? Because Huckabee is out there. He's run before, which generally happens. He's reaching out again to the moneyed Republicans, I'm told. But the moneyed Republicans may be split between two or three candidates. He's got more of an direct line into the social conservatives. Does this solidify him as perhaps the front runner?
I think that it is too early to say a press release by candidate A on Monday is helping candidate B on Tuesday. I just think we're way too early for any of that. I think what we are seeing right now are the early stages of laying out name identification, laying out some programs, laying out some markers. And I think, Huckabee is well in this race if he wants to run it. I've heard that he probably will end up not running, but he might. I think these other – Mitt Romney is going to take shots. There's no question about it for Massachusetts healthcare.
Right, right.
He's going to take shots for his flip-flop on abortion. But, Tim Pawlenty is going to take some shots, and Sarah Palin will and Don Trump is going to take some shots.
And especially when you get Donald Trump into the social
issues. The one who takes the most shots will be Barack Obama.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go to Schaumburg. Steve is listening to us on WLS. Go ahead, Steve.
Hello, Bruce. Hello, Bruce. Hello, guest.
Hello.
Chris made an interesting point about Trump's duplicity and that he might best be demagoguing to a potential electorate. The thing is, I think there's a strong group out there who are anti-Obama. And so ideology doesn't necessarily have to fit the candidate as much as the star power, the charismatic type of personality that Obama represented in the first place, and, disregarding his competency as a leader of the country. And so to field a candidate on the Republican side that can match the celebrity and charismatic qualities of Obama, you would need somebody to rise above just the standard.
Very big point here.
Everybody is nodding as you speak. We'll let everybody respond.
Very big point. The reason Republicans typically go with somebody who's run before is because we do not have the press supporting our candidate the way the press allowed Barack Obama to run. Press refused to look at Barack Obama's background. The press knowingly contributed to the fraud that was perpetrated on the American people. Republicans have got to have somebody who's a guy or a gal.
They will look into Donald Trump, though.
Let me tell you, there's a lot to find.
They will not roll over and play dead to Donald Trump.
That's exactly
right.
Steve,
you agree with that?
No, we're talking about certain candidates, but I'm of the opinion that before this is over, we're going to find candidates we're not talking about jumping into the race that are better than all the rest of them and that can
name
get support.
One.
Jim DeMint.
Okay. Name one.
Name one. You want another one? Yeah. Michelle Bachman we're not talking about. I mean,
we're talking about her. She's at 4%.
She's viable. Newt Gingrich is viable. But, for me, out of
if Donald Trump can run with I don't even know how many ex-wives he's got. I think that makes it. Yeah. Newt Gingrich has got to be breathing easy.
Mark, what do you think of that?
Good. Well, Newt's been trying to explain away those things or pretending that they didn't happen. Back to the point earlier about star power, charisma, I think, there's a lot of euphemistic language you talked about how Trump can cut through that. But like today, Geithner was on Meet the Press, and David Gregory asked him about gas prices. And he says, what about the $4 a gallon gas prices? And Geithner says, oh, that hurts the American people. Well, that's a euphemism. They're going through pain. So if a Republican can come along and talk about what it's like to pay $4 a gallon for gas, And explain the American people's frustration with that, that candidate would have the charisma to match Obama.
Tim Geithner well, doesn't.
You're talking Huckabee.
Yeah,
Huckabee
can do that.
Huckabee is the one that was able to cut to the bone in most of the debates last year, as well as Ron Paul does as well.
Right.
Tim Geithner does not care about $4 per gallon gas. He is leading this economy off a cliff. The Barack Obama administration wants $5 a gallon gas so that they can make their sin fuels and their so-called green technology look solid. The best thing happening in the Barack Obama administration is Joe Biden is falling asleep listening to Barack Obama so that he can become an air traffic controller after he's unemployed.
All right, there you go. 1-800-723-8029. Back shortly from Chicago. Good luck. From San Antonio, Texas, to Youngstown, Ohio, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. Around the table this evening, we have Mark Casella with us. He is a contributor to Huffington Post. He is an assistant professor of English with a passion for radical English writing and also politics as well. He teaches for Ivy Tech, a community college that is in Bloomington, Indiana. Chris Roebling also joins us. He is a political strategist, and he works in the public relations field with Jane C. Thompson and Associates. Once upon a time, he was the executive director of the Cook County Republican Party. And Steve Bollage also joins us. He is co-founder of the Will County Tea Party Alliance, and he is the clerk of Homer Township in Will County. And we have lots of callers on the line, 1-800-723-8029. We're talking about that Republican presidential field and whether or not, with Donald Trump doing well in the recent polls, whether you would actually vote for him. Let's check Steve in Chicago on WLS. Go ahead. You're on the air, Steve. Sam, rather. I'm sorry. Sam.
Hello, go ahead. Bruce? Hey, Bruce.
Yes, go ahead. You're on the air. Speak.
Bruce, I want to ask you a question. Did you watch the Trump Tower rise above the museum?
Yes, I did.
And were you amazed at, because I'm a Chicagoan also, were you amazed at how quickly that building rose up from the old Sun-Times building?
No, I don't think I was, not so
wild. Well, the museum is not open yet, but that Trump Tower, it is a magnificent structure in Chicago.
Oh, right, okay.
And whenever I hear people
your case, sir, is what is your case? If your case is Donald Trump is a much better developer than Bruce Dumont, you're absolutely true.
But absolutely true. Bruce, every day.
But we'll be done in 2 weeks. But go ahead.
You know how hard it is to get the logistics together, to get everything working and moving forward.
Yeah.
And this man seems to do it. And
oh, yes.
These people who say that he's a media creation, is absolutely successful. He has actually constructed things that are monumental. And you know what? Americans are sick of we have to elect a politician who was the governor of a state for one term or two terms, and they're the only one that can actually do the job. If Trump is smart, he will right away suggest that he is going to take as a number two man a general, like a Petraeus or whoever, another four or five-star general, and he will have covered his bases. That man is absolutely electable, and he's not the same as Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich was out there pretending he was a holier-than-thou fellow while he's doing something with government employees in his own car while castigating the president. No, he's not the same. I'm not a Donald Trump groupie or advocate, but of all these people, like Sarah Palin, are you kidding me? Who would ever vote for her for president? Who's going to vote for Pawlenty for president? Who's going to vote for the guy I see who has possibly a chance is the governor of the state next door, Mitch Daniels. But Trump right now, if he focuses himself in on who he is and how he has logistically and constructively been successful, and he picks a strong military guy, persuade Petraeus as number two, mm-hmm. I think he's unstoppable.
Okay, Sam, let me just stand the line. We're going to let everybody respond, but let me respond. Let me respond first. I agree with you, and I will say on this day, at this moment in time, I believe that Donald Trump could be elected president of the United States. And I say that because I think Donald Trump could win the Republican nomination. I'm looking at this field. I'm responding, and I'm agreeing with much of what you had to say. And I know a little bit about media and a little bit about politics, and I'm telling you, I know what runs the media machines of America, phrase makers, people that say outrageous things. Donald Trump does that. His whole life has been a celebrity. Does he have a lot of, you know, things, baggage in the background? Yes. A lot of people know about the baggage. A lot of people don't know about it. They will know all about it by the time they get to Election Day. But is Donald Trump electable? Yes. And I also believe that Ross Perot was electable when he was rolling along until he stumbled. He ran into a media, and he had a temperament that was not suitable for the type of investigations that one goes through when you're running for president. I think Donald Trump has, frankly, thicker skin than Ross Perot. Thus, I think he could go further.
Yeah. Donald Trump presents enormous strengths, political assets, as he crosses this threshold into possibly campaigning for president, possibly running, possibly being a very serious candidate. He's got a past, and he's already, in my opinion, made some goofy choices, like going after the birther thing. But that's
what got him attention.
I think it got him a lot of attention, and I think that he is a – I think anybody who – discounts him now does so very much at their peril, Democrat, Independent, or Republican.
I think it's a little bit early to go out and get behind anybody right now, because I really think that there's going to be people like Mitch Daniels. That was somebody I didn't think of offhand. Mm-hmm. But there's going to be other people jumping into this race that can win, that are very viable and
have
a good record.
I think what's going to happen is Donald Trump has said he's going to let everybody know by June. That's not far away. And I would think what would happen is if there's a few more polls like this, you're going to get some of the big money people that are going to get together in a room, and they're going to find who was the stop Trump candidate. And it may be somebody that, again, is not in the race. Mark.
Well, I was just going to
say. By the way, you live in Indiana. What sort of a guy is Mitch Daniels? Well, now, again, we should know you're a liberal Democrat, but yeah, what sort of a governor is he?
Well, he's a very popular governor in the state. He's dealt with a lot of tough issues regarding cutting education. But right now, for instance, like Detroit, they're laying off teachers by the hundreds, sending out pink slips in cities like Gary, Indiana. And a lot of that's a direct result of Mitch Daniels' cuts and the face of protests of many people who protested at the state capitol. So, but Daniels is popular with the conservatives in the state, certainly. But
he's popular with the taxpayers. He's popular mm-hmm. with the people who have to pay for the government structure. He's made government work. This is important because liberals don't really want to get connected to making government work. They just want to hire more union members.
Well, the question is who the government works for. Is it for working for the Trumps? Or is it working for, you know, the caller brought up the building that came up from Trump, and we need to be asking who built that and how much did they make?
I think they should work for the people mm-hmm. and not for the unions. The government sector unions are killing us.
No, literally we should be asking why aren't the regular private sector workers making what the public sector workers make?
Public sector union, they get paid by us, the taxpayer.
Donald Trump also gave $50,000 to Rahm Emanuel.
I just want to say, well, that's why that building got built so fast. But I want to tell you.
No, because he probably gave more to Rich Daley.
Exactly. This is the kind of guy he is. He adapts to the situation, and that can be a very effective and very important.
I think a lot of people who are not the political people that you guys hang around with,
right.
A lot of those people, frankly, they don't care how it's done as long as it's done.
That's the solution thing. But I want to get back. The reason that the folks in the private sector mm-hmm. are not making as much as the public employee unions,
yes.
Okay, is because the public employee unions sit on both sides of the table. You've got the union on this side, and on that side, they've got Pat Quinn in the state of Illinois, who they put in office. So when you are sitting on both sides of the table because you're taking tax dollars and putting them into political funds for your liberal Democrat friends, you're going to end up getting a sweet deal.
Yeah, corporations have no political influence or money in the game. You're right.
Well, we could take a different approach to this, too. Now, unions are give the public sector unions give most all of their money to the Democratic
98%,
Party.
98%, that's all.
And the Democratic Party turns around and promotes illegal immigration, and those people turn around and scab all those union jobs in the private sector and go out and form non-union companies and hurt the common union guys.
I don't think Democrats are promoting illegal immigration. I haven't seen that. But secondly,
I think they do. The Dream Act.
Let's let them respond.
Well, I was just going to say corporations that employ the illegal immigrants are the people that should be investigated. And I think the question is, why is illegal immigration persisting? Well, we have an economy that invites these people here to keep wages low, to exploit these people.
Well, what about Arizona? The government
so
suing the state of Arizona?
Well, people are saying, I want to go be exploited. I'm having such a great time in Mexico. I need to go get exploited in Indiana, where Mark the professor is going to tell me how exploited I am. This is the mental calculus that you're anticipating.
Arizona says we want to stop the problem, and the government, United States government, sues them with the country of Mexico because they want to protect their own state. What's that,
Mark?
The exploitation comes with let me collect my thoughts here. But basically what I'm trying to say is that, yes, life in Mexico is hard for many people. And America does offer opportunities that maybe don't exist in some parts of Mexico. And the American exploitation might be better than the economic systems in other countries. People from Lithuania, Ukraine, Eastern Europe who come here. But the point is, we still have an exploitive economic system where businesses are allowed to run rampant over the rights of workers.
When we come back, we're going to ask the question, has Michelle Bachmann overtaken Sarah Palin? Is she the new darling of the Republican field? Your response to that when we come back. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back shortly. Bruce Dumont back. We asked the musical question. We're not going to talk about Admiral Stockdale right now. We're going to talk about Michelle Bachmann, and we're going to talk about Sarah Palin. And I asked before the break whether Michelle Bachmann, because of her meteoric rise, because of her appearances on television, has she in some ways surpassed Sarah Palin as the darling of the Republican field? And I will ask you, longtime favorite of Sarah Palin. We'll put out that out front. But
well, I'm a favorite of Sarah Palin to a point. You know, I didn't say I would support her for president. You know, I said I like what she says, and I do like what Michelle Bachmann says also. But as far as supporting for president, I'd have to know a lot more about her. I think that she says the right things, and when you watch her on TV, she comes off fantastic. But again, is she the person? You know,
who on this list are you excited about?
We
went through the long. Let's ask Steve. We have Donald Trump, Mike Huckabee, Mitt Romney, Newt Gingrich, Sarah Palin, Ron Paul, Tim Pawlenty, and Michelle Bachmann. There's got to be somebody on this list.
If I had to pick somebody right now, I'd probably go with Tim Pawlenty.
Why? I don't get that.
Well, when I get everybody's blogs,
yeah,
and I read what they all say, and they all say basically the same thing. But when I read his, he seems more authentic with what he's saying.
Well, what do you think of Tim Pawlenty as a political animal, Mark? This is a Democrat now.
All right. Well, so to be honest, I mean, what Pawlenty has that the others lack is policy experience. And he does speak to the issues and not just talking points like Michelle Bachmann's a great face, and she's enthusiastic and energetic and can energize the Tea Party, and she's a good speaker.
She is articulate.
Yeah. She's articulate. Mm-hmm. But I think what's lacking in Plenty is he's kind of a wet blanket. I mean, he's Huckabee without the charm, I think.
Oh, no. Tim Pawlenty, I think, is a person who is destined for very big office. And I think
which
that
what office is it?
I think that he could be president. I think
you
he
really
could be
do.
Vice president. Absolutely. I've had the privilege of meeting him a couple of times, chatting about a lot of stuff. Tim Pawlenty has got an authenticism that is undeniable because of his roots in the sort of the very lower middle class south side of St. Paul. People up there lived a very tough life. And he worked his way through.
But those people don't dominate the Republican primary. Yeah,
that's exactly the point. Tim Pawlenty has got not just policy. I think a lot of them have a lot of policy. I mean, you got several former governors, mm-hmm. former Speaker of the House. You got a lot of very strong policy people there. But in addition to that, Pawlenty appealed to the moderate middle. He appealed to the independents in Minnesota, mm-hmm. the land of, you know, Mark Dayton and Jesse Ventura and all of those liberals up there. And he got a lot of stuff done at the state level. So I think Tim Pawlenty, I'm excited about everybody on that list.
Well, that's because you're Republican. Let's go to Spokane, Washington, KXLY. Mike is listening to us. You're excited about everybody.
I'm excited about everybody.
All right, go ahead. You're on the air, Mike. Go ahead. Who are you excited about on this list?
An early happy Easter to you. If the Republican convention became deadlocked, no one had enough delegates, is there someone outside the convention they might turn to?
I don't think they would turn to anybody outside the convention, but I mean, it's hard to get deadlocked conventions these days.
Yeah, I mean, deadlocked conventions really are sort of engineered out by our reliance on primaries. But you know, I think that the excitement is that Barack Obama has done such a bad job as president, and that is a very tinged excitement. People don't want to see the country going down. It is going down. We have got Muammar Gaddafi, as of today, Sunday, using cluster bombs against civilians. You've got Muammar Gaddafi absolutely ensconced. It looks like we're into a long slog. Why is that? Why are innocents dying? Because Barack Obama couldn't make up his mind. He was waiting to be led by the Organization for African Unity. That's not the name anymore, but he is waiting for the Arab League. Barack Obama has failed in international. He is failing domestic. He spent us into oblivion. He's got no plan to get us back except demagoguery.
Let's ask our liberal whether he agrees at least with the criticism of the foreign policy of Barack Obama.
Well, I'm heartily disappointed in the foreign policy of Barack Obama, with the exception of his tone. And I know a lot of conservatives would say he's been on apology tours and that sort of thing. But I think what was disappointing to me about the intervention in Libya was that here you had a genuine democratic uprising that didn't involve American military force trying to oust leaders, overturning governments and pushing for democracy on their own. And it felt very bandwagon-esque for me for us to jump on to Libya, almost as if it was America trying to ride the coattails of what the Arab people are doing.
If I may say, we had two big problems in Libya. No one knows why we're there, okay? Barack Obama kind of pulled that out of, you know, 3 weeks earlier he had mentioned Libya, and now all of a sudden we're there in Libya. And he's doing a lousy job. It's one thing to be wrong, okay, but at least then go do a competent job. I don't know why we're in Libya. We have no vital interest in Libya. He's the one that made it an issue.
So you're
now
pushing
he's doing
for a ground war in Libya? What would be a competent job?
I think Barack Obama
in Libya
has to be held responsible for the fact that he decided to get us into Libya, and now innocents are dying. That's his problem.
And what does Barack Obama do with our allies, like Britain and Israel? You know, how does he treat those people? No, I mean, Britain's been with us forever, mm-hmm. and he doesn't like Britain.
I wouldn't say that.
Why do you say he doesn't like Britain?
Well, I think he was not invited to that wedding specifically because of the way that he treats the British.
You, now, you really don't think that the president likes Britain?
Oh,
because
he wasn't
invited to the wedding?
No, I got a feeling, you know, like some of the stuff I've been reading about Barack, he doesn't care about Britain. He kind of like wrote him off.
I think that's true. I think these UK-US relations are in a free fall because Barack Obama has this postmodern, post-colonial view of the world, and he's ready to toss our number one ally.
Folks, and what about
we're going to pick up on that in the next hour. We're going to talk about the budget. We're going to solve the budget deficit issue in the next hour, the three of you.
We are.
And I can tell you that the idea of Donald Trump for president is picking up steam on the phones. So normally we would end the discussion here, but we're going to continue those discussions when we continue. If you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. If you're listening to us on radio, back shortly. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. Around the table this evening, we have Mark Casello. He is a contributor for the Huffington Post and a college professor from Indiana. Steve Bollage is here. He is co-founder of the Will County Tea Party Alliance, and Republican political strategist Chris Roebling joins us. He works for Jane Thompson & Associates in Chicago. 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. We are going to be talking about the budget and other issues, but again, we've got a boatload of calls left over from the first hour when we were talking about the surprise showing of Donald Trump in the recent Republican polls that have been released, and we got lots of people on the line. Let's go to Rob in Highland, Indiana. He identifies himself as a Tea Party member. Go ahead. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi there.
Hello.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, you're perfect.
Okay, great. I would much prefer either Sarah Palin or Michelle Bachmann to most of the other candidates, and I'll tell you why. In the last political election, I'm a talk radio junkie and a political junkie, and I can assure you, from what I heard, they were far out involved in that election to do and make as much good as happened as possible. Where on the other hand, Mitt Romney, I don't even know if he was even quoted for anything in it. And in the thing that went on in Wisconsin, they were out there. Those people are natural leaders, where these other people, many of these other people, are just more of the same that we've had in the past, with the exception, I think that Huckabee, I think that he would make a good leader. But again, Sarah and Michelle Bachmann both invested into the last political cycle, and they put their names out there. They put their names on the line. They did what leaders do.
I want to let Chris Roebling respond to what you said and sort of focus on one aspect of what you said, and that is that Mitt Romney may have squandered the last couple of years.
I think Mitt Romney is not showing the kind of strength right now that would have resulted from an appropriate plan and execution after his last run. Mitt Romney made a very solid first go, and that normally
almost made it.
He almost made it, and that normally in the Republican Party gets you way up there. And he's not really way up there right now. He's up there, but he's got Huckabee out there in front of him. And now Trump, I don't think that Mitt Romney is showing real organic strength across the spectrum in the Republican side.
Is there anybody on this list? Thanks, caller. Is there anybody on this list, Mark, as a Democrat, that you think that you would worry about, that you think would have the combination of policy, personality to maybe go all the way?
Given the attitude of the country right now, I think a Trump is probably, as much as he's an outsider right now, I think he's got the money and the personality, because there's going to be a charisma battle because he's going up and against an incumbent. And when Barack Obama gets out in front of the American people, he has a tremendous personal appeal in spite of his policy choices. And it's hard to listen to Barack Obama, who tries to channel a Reagan-esque positivity in his oratory that I think is going to be hard to beat in this election.
Does Donald Trump also represent, at least in this field, the person who was most likely, because of his birther issue and some of his red meat rhetoric, is the person that can really rev up the Tea Party, if you know, movements. Or not everybody in the Tea Party is going to vote with one person, but does he have the ability to get them juiced up? And at the same time, because of his success as an entrepreneur and as a businessman, does he also have the ability to energize the independent urban voter who was a key part of Obama's appeal? Mm-hmm. Mark.
Well, I think you said that articulately and well.
Thank you.
But
I practice it all after.
What's lacking, I think, you're right, there will be this, what we need is a person who knows about business to bring jobs back and that sort of campaign if Trump continues to run. But the independent voters, a lot of those went to Barack regarding the war issue. And I think what you're not hearing on either side
is... In the primary, though. But in the general... Obviously, they were somewhat diluted in the general, were they not?
To a degree, but I think many independents believe that Barack Obama was going to close Guantanamo Bay, that he was going to wind down the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the opposites happened. And I think those independents who voted for Obama primarily on the basis of the war issue may turn to another.
But the 20 or 30 something that's texting, incessantly, mm-hmm. that. It would seem to me that that generation, that demographic, which could really be turned on by this celebrity aspect mm-hmm. of Trump, that he has a greater ability to do that across the board than any of the other names on this list. Steve?
Well, I think that Trump is really good for us right now because he's, like you said, he's thrown out the red meat. And the Tea Party people want to hear that red meat. And I tell you something right now, Tea Party people are the silent majority of Reagan. They're 40 or 50% Democrat and Republican. It's not one or the other. Mm-hmm. All they are is what Chris said before, people that are angry and fed up with the same old garbage. Mm-hmm. We're worried about our country.
Five, let's go to Joe in Gurnee, Illinois. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Bruce.
Yep.
I think H. Ross Trump has no business running in any capacity whatsoever. He's simply doing what Perot did back in 92 and 96. Trump has already announced that if he doesn't win the GOP nomination, he's open to running as a third-party candidate. That's a way of inoculating his followers into thinking that the GOP isn't serious and he's the one who can lead everybody to the promised land.
No, hold on one second. Donald Trump, I forgot, this is Joe. Yes, thank you, Joe. But I want to say this. Donald Trump is a very intelligent person. He has read the history of presidential campaigns. He knows the quickest way to being a non-factor or to being a negative factor is to go the third-party route. That ain't going to happen. He is saying that. So that, and I think this may have been part of what you were saying, that elements in the Tea Party who are anti-Republican, because the Tea Party, I keep making this point, did not start with Rick Santelli. It did not start then. It started when Republican conservatives and independents and Democrats were angry at George W. Bush mm-hmm. overspending, what they perceived at that level to be overspending. And so
Trump says he was a bad president, a lot of Tea Party people agree with that.
Well, he was saying that a long time ago. But, yeah, I mean, the whole bad president thing isn't necessarily going to sink him.
Now he says that Obama's the worst president
now he's saying, ever. Right. He once said Carter was the worst president. I mean, so this is the kind of thing when you're not in public life, you don't watch this stuff. I don't think this is going to be fatal, but he's going to take lumps or he's going to take some hits for it.
We've got to pause. 1-800-723-8289 is the phone number. There's somebody who thinks the Republicans need a rock star. There's that term again. We'll find out who they think it is when we come back from Chicago. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, and let's go to Ann. She's listening in Algonquin, Illinois, and she can answer the question I posed before the break. She thinks the Republicans need a rock star. Who is that, in your view, from this list?
Well, hi, Bruce. Yes, we certainly need a rock star, but more than a rock star. Let me say, I've been a conservative since I first voted for the presidential election, 1956. Mm-hmm. I've been a Reagan conservative since 1975.
Uh-huh.
And I think at this point in time in our nation's history, we do need a rock star, but someone who's a lot more than a rock star, really has something to offer. The problem with the Republican Party right now is they have so many talented people, so many people with proven ability, with so many ideas, you know, like giving more freedom back to the people. And there's just a big slate of them out there. But I, at this point, I'm supporting Donald Trump because I think, you know, we are a TV-oriented society, and headlines are what, you know, people see rather than going into any real in-depth analysis of so many situations. So I think Donald Trump could bring that to the primary elections. He's not only a straight talker, as I perceive him, but a straight doer. And if he says something, he doesn't mince any words, but he's going to do what he says, unlike just, you know, giving the people a lot of empty rhetoric, as Obama has done for since he was the first running for president.
And I think what you have articulated in the last minute and a half with your answer, I think you speak for an awful lot of people in the United States at this moment in time. And an awful lot of Republicans.
My name's Chris Roebling, and I want to tell you, I just heard something I didn't think that I would hear. And if you're a harbinger, if you're a bellwether, let me tell you, it was 7:19 on this night that we heard a Reagan conservative say the rock star is Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Now that, Anne,
right,
from Algonquin, you made a big statement.
He's an exceptional rock star. He's got a lot more depth to him than what we've seen with coming from Mr. Obama, certainly.
Well, Anne, we're going to go from you to Joe in Schaumburg, Illinois. And he sees it an entirely different way. Joe, go ahead. Donald Trump. Why?
I do see it in a different way. First of all, Donald Trump's doing this for his ego. I personally don't think he's going to run. And the Republican field, yeah, bring it on. Bring him on. Because if you look at him, first of all, Mitt Romney, the biggest flip-flopper in that field that I've ever seen. Mike Huckabee, who a lot of Republicans don't like because he raised taxes when he was governor of Arkansas. And the Republican Party, who's supposed to be the party of family values, aren't they concerned that Newt Gingrich was married four times and Donald Trump three times?
Three times.
I mean,
sir,
isn't this supposed to be the party of family values? If this was Barack Obama and he was married three or four times, they would go absolutely nuts. Absolutely nuts.
Hey, we went nuts on the fact that he was a left-wing, you know, wacko, and look what it did. I mean, he won the election. I am going to tell you something. This is what you need to learn from the people. Anne from Algonquin has been voting conservative since 1956. She probably voted for Eisenhower, and think of all of the, you know,
Goldwater,
yeah.
Bob Dole.
So she's been down that line, and she was a Reagan Republican. She said 75. That is a big statement. When you say you were with Reagan in 75, mm-hmm, that's saying a lot, because that was before he challenged our friend Gerald Ford. So if the and of Algonquins of the world are saying yes to Donald Trump, then the issues that you raise, which are legitimate and serious and thoughtful, are not motivating the ands from Algonquin, and that's something to learn from.
The other thing is, if you look at Republican primary politics, if you are the person that's out there and you are, I will use the term, bomb thrower. If you're the bomb thrower, if you're the phrase maker, if you're the one that have the people bouncing off the walls with your rhetoric, and you've got a little bit of TV personality to you, like Patrick Buchanan, you are going to get 33% of the Republican primary vote. Historically, that's what you will get. The anti-incumbent, anti-establishment, anti-country club Republican is about 33% of the Republican vote. You get 33% of the vote in this field, you are the Republican nominee.
That's true.
Because this field is so diverse. And I think what will happen, as I said a few moments ago, what will happen is you'll get the, by the way, you know who does not show up on this list at all is Haley Barbour.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Haley's not there. Chris Christie, Marco Rubio.
What about if Donald Trump ran with Haley Barbour?
Oh, I mean, I think these guys, I think we've got a strong group, notwithstanding some of these other observations that you and others have made, Bruce, and I think we've got a very good shot, but we got to keep running like crazy.
Jerry in Cooksville, Tennessee, is going to throw another name into the hopper here.
Hey, yeah.
Go ahead,
Bruce.
Jerry. Yes.
I would like to mention the freshman senator from Florida, Marco Rubio. A lot of people say that he doesn't have the experience and he's not ready, and he's even mentioned that. But sometimes when your country needs you, you have to move along. You have to go with it. And I think if Donald Trump is leading in some polls, I think Marco Rubio, just with his the way he speaks of the greatness of this country compared to our president, in a way, he would. I think he would win the nomination. And I would love to see him debate the president about the greatness of this country. It would be. It would be a one-sided show, and Marco would win easily.
Marco Rubio is an extraordinarily gifted person, and he is doing a great job for the people of Florida, and he is going to be a great U.S. senator. But you, if you're looking at Marco Rubio, who is brand new to the national scene, versus Donald Trump, who is a 25-year national figure, then I think there are going to be a lot of folks out there who are going to say, Marco, why don't you ask Donald if he'll have you as vice presidential running mate, because you won't even lose your Senate seat. You're guaranteed. You got no downside.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
I wonder what would happen to people like the relationship that Trump has, you know, in New York State with Mayor Bloomberg. I wonder what influence he would have with them. I would assume they're good friends.
Oh yeah. Oh, they're huge. They do so much work together. I mean, he's also that. Trump is a guy who gets along with Democrats wherever he needs to.
Donald Trump, going back to the issue that really came to the fore last week in the debate over the when the House voted for their Republican budget bill for 2012, and prior to that, you had the president give his speech on the deficit, in which he sort of draws the line in the sand. Some of this partisan talk that he said he wasn't going to participate in. Well, obviously the campaign is on again. Mm-hmm. He is saying that, you know, rich people have an opportunity that they should be paying more. Would Donald Trump be the perfect candidate for Barack Obama to make his case? If we're going to have a national discussion about the role of government, what government pays for, what they don't pay for, and whether or not people who are wealthy are paying their fair share of the American price tag, of a ticket for the American dream, would that not be the perfect line in the sand between Barack Obama and Donald Trump? And let's have it out once and for all.
Yeah, I'm drooling at the opportunity to have Barack Obama run against another millionaire billionaire. Remember, John McCain didn't remember how many houses he owned, right? And so to have a Donald Trump come in there in the face of this unemployment and many Americans out of work or underworked, underemployed, Trump would be the golden boy. And I just can't believe the average working voter would want to embrace him examine his wealth. I mean, look at how his wealth has grown. And I know most Americans want to be wealthy. But the fact is, the sad fact, is that for many Americans, they'll never become Donald Trump.
Didn't Barack Obama take an oath to serve and protect the United States of America? I believe that's what he swore. Well, he's not protecting the United States from financial destruction. Our country will not exist the way we exist now in the future unless it's addressed. And it isn't addressed by raising the debt ceiling. Not at all. They have to cut spending, period.
Yeah,
they have to live in their means.
But he will argue that he is cutting spending.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he isn't. I think Bruce, Marco Rubio is leading the conversation about the debt limit. And he's closer to the people because he said in a Wall Street Journal op-ed 10 days ago, hey, I'll vote to increase the debt limit when we solve Medicare, when we solve Medicaid, when we solve Social Security, when we solve the $14 trillion, the fact that this president has indebted us more than anyone else in history. He has put more debt on the national credit card in the 25 months he's been president than Bush did in his whole 8 years.
That's because Bush was keeping the wars off the books, right?
Does it matter?
No, it's not.
Does it really make a difference? You know, we're worried about funding Medicaid. We're worried about funding all these special projects, and we need them. But there's a problem. if we ruin our country by this debt, there won't be any Medicaid, period, because we won't have enough money to fund anything. So we better solve the darn problem.
Chris, I said a few moments ago that I could see the power elite of the Republican Party getting together and conspiring to try to find a candidate that would stop Donald Trump. Do you think that's true? Or do you think that some of those moneyed types would understand that Donald Trump has something a little extra, and maybe that's a bandwagon they should get on, not try to throw a monkey wrench into
it? I think that we have seen an establishment Republicanism coming out of Washington, represented by a guy I admire very much, Karl Rove, who spent 6 weeks in the fall attacking Sarah Palin when he should not have. He spent 3 weeks attacking some woman who was running for Senate in Delaware, and if he had not said anything about that woman in Delaware, she probably would have won, even if she's a little goofy. That's okay. We've got a lot of goofy Democrat senators. And now he's attacking Donald Trump. So I think there is an establishment in Washington that wants to hold on to the marbles that it has held, and that's not necessarily going to play in the sticks out here.
What I see similar to the establishment that got behind John Conley,
right,
because they wanted to stop Ronald Reagan.
Right.
Trump could be the Reagan of this year. Back shortly. Bruce Dubont back in Chicago. Mark Casella is here. He's our Democrat. He's a contributor to the Huffington Post. He's an assistant professor of radical English at Ivy Tech, a community college in Bloomington, Illinois.
Well, Indiana.
You're a professor of Indiana, by the way. You are a professor of English, but your area of expertise is radical American literature.
Exactly. Precisely.
And also radical American politics.
Yes, as I try.
And Steve Bollage is here. He is the co-founder of the Will County Tea Party Alliance. The Will County is west of Chicago, western rural Chicago land area. He is also the clerk of Homer Township and is the clerk. What exactly do you do, clerk?
As a clerk, I take the minutes. I file documents with the county, and I file documents within the township. And then I feel...
And that's your full-time job?
That's my full-time job.
You're elected.
Yes, I was.
Elected. And when are you up again for re-election?
I'm up in 2 years.
Very good. Okay. Joining us also is Chris Roebling. Once upon a time, he ran the Republican Party in the county of Cook and the city of Chicago, rather. He also managed the last successful, at least well-run campaign for mayor of Chicago as a Republican.
Last real campaign.
By you.
Yes, thank you.
And you now work for Jane Thompson, who is the former First Lady of Illinois.
Yes, she is.
And associates, and you're in the public relations field.
That's right.
And you deal with public affairs all the time. Public relations, not public affairs. Public relations, we should say. Sam in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, WRNN. You cannot win the Republican primary if you do not do well in South Carolina. How would any one of these candidates, and specifically Donald Trump, you know, Rudy Giuliani did not do well in South Carolina. How would Donald Trump play in South Carolina, in your view, Sam?
I think probably because of the regional roots. I think it'll probably be Haley Barbour here.
Okay.
I think that Donald Trump, in the general election, Donald Trump or anybody who runs against Obama will carry the state, and I believe that anybody who runs against Obama will defeat him. And I want to say that I have never missed a presidential election. My picks have always been correct since I was 18 years old. My first one was Carter, running against, obviously, Ford in 76. Obama, people have Obama fatigue. I live in a conservative area, but we get 15 million visitors a year here, and I hear conversations at gas pumps, people in hotels. Barack Obama, it does not matter who runs against him, he will lose this coming election. People think he's doing a terrible job, and he's not a very good leader.
Okay, thanks for your call. Let's go to Bayside, California. KGOE is the station. Let's go to Dave. Nice to hear from the Golden State tonight.
Well, gentlemen, I am a liberal, and I am very, very critical of what has been going on with the neocons and the Republicans in general. I don't think they're representing the interests of the people. They're representing the interests of the very, very wealthy special interests. That's my opinion. I question now, Donald Trump, who I know very little about, sometimes very wealthy people have made good presidents, and I found that to be true of FDR, JFK. It's possible that he doesn't have to have his hand out to these same big corporate special interests. Those that are owned by them right now are not acting in the interest of the people. They are acting in the interest of the board of directors of General Motors and Lockheed Martin and General Electric and Boeing and
Merrill Lynch.
That's not what the people need, not in this country.
Mark, your response.
No, I agree with the caller, and he brings up a good point. I mean, what FDR had that maybe Donald Trump lacks, as far as I've seen so far, is compassion. Does Donald Trump speak compassionately to the Americans? Or, as Mr. Balich might respond to, is anger more important than compassion for the Tea Party?
Well, I don't think anger's the issue. I think the issues and the policy that are getting shoved down our throat by Mr. Obama and his gang of socialists are really, really the whole issue. Because when I look at, I just, like I said before, the debt ceiling, that's huge with me. The spending, everything that they do, I think Barack Obama is a very intelligent man, and the country's going down the tubes by design of all those people in power.
Yeah. Do you want Donald Trump, in the weeks that are leading up to his decision in June, do you, Steve, want him to start dealing with specifics about what the country is facing right now? Do you want to move beyond some of the red meat that he's throwing out there and come down? You know, he's either going to be for the Paul Ryan. I would assume he's going to be for the Paul Ryan plan. It seems to me that if I were advising him, it would seem to me he should be the chief cheerleader for the congressional Republicans.
He does have to start addressing the issues to be viable. If he continues just throw red meat out and be angry or say what's wrong without coming up with a good solution, then he's not going to be viable anymore.
Chris.
Two points. Number one is I think that he should deliver a substantive speech about job creation, because that is what he has done as a real estate developer. And I think it ought to be as good as any speech. I heard Haley Barbour give a substantive speech on job creation here in Chicago 3 weeks ago. It was fantastic. Donald Trump's got to do that. Number two, I'm not sure Donald Trump will go for the Paul Ryan. And I'll tell you why. I think there is a bipartisan draft from this so-called gang of six senators, three Democrats, three Republicans. Tom Coburn is on there.
Right.
That's going to be a very serious attempt to take the Deficit Reduction Commission recommendations and turn them into a workable budget. And Donald Trump might go for that and say, this is where we should go, because there were Democrats and Republicans working together on commission. There are Democrats and Republican senators working together. I'm going to be somebody who tries to bring people together to get a solution, because solutions are more important than ideology. I think he might do that.
That would be very smart if he did that. Let's go to Greg listening to us. He's driving on I-57 near Champaign, Illinois. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good evening, folks.
Hello.
The name that you're leaving off the list is a man that I support, who's also a former corporate CEO, former radio show talk host,
and
a strict constitutionalist. His name is Herman Cain.
Great guy.
He's a fantastic speaker. Yep. And I guarantee you, if he won the Republican nomination, he would annihilate Barack Obama in the debates.
Have you caught his
hand? It would be the Battle of Waterloo times 10.
Why is he not showing up in this poll?
I don't know about that poll. He's won two or three straw polls in the last couple of months. He's placed first in two or three straw polls.
I'll tell you, Herman Cain is Herman Cain came to a kind of a right of center gathering in Schaumburg, Illinois last fall.
Right Nation.
And
that's our Right Nation.
Right Nation. And it was about 7,000 folks in the stands. He had them standing and cheering. And I'll tell you something. God's honest truth, 95% of the people in that place were white, middle class and upper middle class, Protestant Republicans. And Herman Cain walked in there, and he gave a barn burner of a speech.
He's African American.
He's African American, and he had him standing, cheering to the ref. Were you there?
I was there, and it was fantastic. Herman Cain was outstanding. I couldn't say anything other than inspiring.
Yeah. He brought tears to our eyes, and we stood up and cheered. Mm-hmm. I'm serious. It was something to see. And I just don't – Herman Cain's problem is he's not a national figure like Donald Trump. He's not a former governor. He isn't a senator. He comes at this – he's sort of like a CEO type who doesn't have the big name ID and the bit. He's not a billionaire. He's maybe a very successful – you know, maybe he's got $40 million. I don't know what he's got in the bank.
He's only a millionaire.
He's only a millionaire. And what the liberals have done to this country, you've got to be a billionaire to really make a ripple out there.
Let's go to Mary in Tinley Park. Go ahead. You're on the air.
I just want to say I was at the Lockport, Illinois Tea Party rally this past Friday.
Yeah.
And I am a Tea Party member and a registered Republican. And I think it's time that Americans stop being political peeping toms, getting their jollies, listening to the conservative talk show hosts and reading conservative books and columns, and they should get involved in this coming election to get Obama out of office.
And who is your preferred candidate moment in time?
I'm praying that we get a Republican and that we rally behind this Republican, and I want to correct
But who, Mary?
I'm not, you know, but I wouldn't be against Sarah Palin because she's got guts.
Yeah, she does.
There's a tendency to be prejudiced against women in politics. It's still, you know, there in America. That's a shame. She has proven herself as a governor of Alaska. I could go on and on. She didn't leave office with a deficit.
Right.
She just left early. That says something for her. She knows how to count.
Hello, Mary. I appreciate your comments. Do you currently receive Medicare?
Do I get Medicare?
Do you receive Medicare?
Well, you want to know my personal life?
Well, I assume
he's a liberal.
He's a liberal. Next, he's going to control the internet. He works for Comcast.
Let me go to my point, Mary.
I take care of all the deficit problems. Okay. I told you I was a Republican. I am a conservative, right-wing Republican.
Mary,
I think they have to do everything they can about the deficits and cut spending.
Here's where I was going, Mary. Republicans like Paul Ryan want to take away Medicare and voucherize it and turn it into a coupon program where you can either get Medicare or a haircut.
Well, like I said, if you take Medicare and you keep going the way it is now, it won't matter because we won't have any Medicare because there won't be any money.
President Obama
won't have any hair because you'll pull your hair out like Chris Roebling. Back shortly, 1-800-723-8289. Bruce Dumont, don't go away. From Indianapolis to Minneapolis, you are listening to Beyond the Beltway. Let's go to Jan. She's on the Indiana Turnpike. Jan, nice to have you with us tonight. I understand you've got a favorite or two.
Yeah, I think Tim Pawlenty would be great, or Herman Cain. Both of them would be real good. And I just don't trust Donald Trump totally. I think he'd be a good leader, but I think the other two guys would be better.
Okay.
The other two, you mean Pawlenty and who?
Herman Cain.
Herman Cain. Okay. Thank you. All right. Thank you.
It'd be a great show. Thanks.
You know, no one has really talked much about this evening other than some derogatory comments about his personal life, and that is the person who usually sort of sets the stage of debate whenever he's in the room, and that's Newt Gingrich. He's hovering at about 11% here. How viable is he given the personal baggage that he has, in your view, Chris?
I think that he has given himself a lot of problems, and I think he's adds more to the national conversation than any other single individual. He is the smartest person out there, Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, and he cares so deeply for America. But the way his career has played out, he's gotten himself into some real tight spots with conservative leaders, with some family people, and I think he's got an uphill climb. But if anybody ever says who's the sharpest, he'll win that primary all day.
What do you think of Newt Gingrich?
He's not going anywhere. He's not going to be a viable candidate in this election. I think people have seen Newt. I mean, he's the government shutdown guy. We've been with Newt for a couple decades here. He came out early with the Trump-type statements about Bush, about Obama's anti-imperialist views, and it just didn't get the traction with the American people, I think, that Trump's been able to get off the similar kinds of issues or playing against the same kind of fears.
Now, you also, by the way, should mention for those people that have been listening to the show for a long time, you were on the program about maybe 3 or 4 months ago, maybe a little bit longer. You basically said that what the Tea Party has been able to do in the last couple of years really is something that the Democratic Party should have done. Elaborate on what you mean by that.
Sure. Well, my point was that the Tea Party taps into what is a central concern of most Americans, which is their families and their jobs. And the Tea Party came out, and they offered a viable platform for people who had these concerns about their families. I mean, I teach in a community college. These are displaced workers who used to be, pretty upper-middle-class factory workers working for GE. And these jobs have left them, and they're frustrated, and there's no one to turn to. And neither party has addressed those concerns. And so many Tea Party, when the Tea Party came along and articulated their feelings of frustration with government and the intractability of the problems they're facing, the Tea Party became a place for them to go. And rather than embrace those voters and try to appeal to them and say, well, you know, the Democrats are offering solutions that might help your life or appeal to these frustrations as well, they pushed these people towards the Tea Party by labeling them kooks and Republicans, and that's
I'm so, that. You know, that's a real mark of intellectual honesty, and I really appreciate you saying that.
Steve, you agree with that?
Well, I think that the Tea Party is a combination of a lot of things. Like Chris said earlier, it started way before Rick Santelli, and it's growing. We just had a rally. It rained, and we still had a packed house. We couldn't fit everybody in the room. People are still upset with the issues and the policies, and the Tea Party is addressing those issues and policies. That's what makes us viable. We're saying what the people want us to say, what most people support.
How much of the Tea Party people that you deal with, just the ones that are within your sphere of influence, how many of them are upset with America's continued involvement in Afghanistan, lesser extent in Iraq, and the incursion into Libya? Because generally speaking, at least the perception of the Tea Party is that it is isolationist in nature.
Well, I don't want to call us isolationist, but what we're afraid of is
that America first.
America needs to be first. We're losing ground. We give money all over the world to fund every project all over the world, foreign aid, the whole bit. We allow anybody that wants to sneak over the border here from Canada or Mexico or come in from the shores, we allow them to come in and then offer them free everything. Where's our money going? It's going to the people that aren't citizens. And that's one of the huge frustrations of the Tea Party.
I want to say...
Now, go ahead.
Well, I think that this... Now we're pointing up something that we should all watch very closely, because the Tea Party... I think that Steve and many others have done a tremendous job in elaborating this group that can accept people from all corners of the political spectrum. Some activists on the right side of the Republican Party want the Tea Party to avowedly support family rights and the marriage agenda, or, you know, one man, one woman marriage.
Yeah.
They want them to take on the social issues.
And they don't
want
to do it.
Well, that's not for me to say. I'm not in the Tea Party. And
they want to do it?
I think there are some Tea Party people out there who are ready to do it. Some of them are in Iowa. That's very significant relative to the presidential caucuses. I think that evolution of the Tea Party in terms of the length of its agenda is very significant.
And by the way, when you get into those social issues, this is where when his true belief is known, this is where I think Donald Trump starts to lose appeal in the Republican primary, just as Rudy Giuliani. Because on some of these social issues, he's not on the conservative end of those social issues. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with that. Most Tea Party people.
But to a Tea Party person, do you have to be lockstep on those social issues?
No.
Because I think of the Tea Party, I think of the Tea Party movement like I thought of the parole movement. It's more about economic and fiscal issues,
correct,
and job-related issues.
That's correct. Most of us are social conservatives, but our focus is on fiscal conservatism right now because we recognize the threat to our country.
On that note, we say farewell to Steve Bollage, co-founder of the Will County Tea Party Alliance, Republican strategist Chris Roebling, Democrat Mark Cassello, contributor for the Huffington Post. We thank you all for joining us this evening. Our thanks to Patrick Johnson and Dan Dorfman for their assistance in the production of this program. I'm Bruce Dumont. Until next week, good night from Chicago.